Now, I'm a proper nerd, but as our business grows, I hate having multiple apps to track different things, having to remember all these logins for everything. And from what we're learning from our listeners, this is a big problem that's really affecting productivity.
Let's be honest, shall we? Mars Tech is just far too complicated. My brain isn't built for it. And most tasks take twice as long because before you can even start, you've got to remember which app has the stuff you need. Was it Google Docs? Did we store it in Asana? Do we even still use Basecamp?
HubSpot has got a great platform that can really help you if you feel the same as us. There's no more hours wasted on time-consuming tasks. There's no more chasing down like things like prospect information. And no more one system for this and one system for that.
Yep, if you and your teams are busy growing your business, then a HubSpot customer platform can help you find leads, reach prospects, and deliver the insights you need to convert them into customers all in one place. Oh, and the HubSpot AI can literally do more of your work for you, so you can focus more on scaling your business.
Visit HubSpot.com to learn how HubSpot's customer platform can help you grow your business. Okay, so if someone's listening to this and thinking, shit, this is the way that I recruit at the moment based on culture fit, then what should they be doing differently? How do they pivot and transition to potentially a more reliable way of recruiting? Hey, welcome to the Truths, Lies and Workplace Culture podcast. This is a podcast for business owners who want to build high-performing teams that genuinely care about the business you've built. I'm Al Elliott.
I'm Leanne Elliott.
And together we co-founded a consultancy called Oblong, which is all about how you can get better people to have fewer surprises and grow faster. So today we are talking about culture fit and how to recruit for culture fit. So Leanne, who is, by the way, our lead consultant, our expert, our scientist, got 14 years in the field, you've got master's degrees, you've got all kinds of qualifications, you're our expert. You're going to be telling us all about how to recruit for culture fit. Is that fair?
Yes, it is. And I think, yes, no, I am. I'm a business psychologist and I've been working in people and culture for many years, both as a consultant and as a manager myself. Recruiting for culture fit, don't. Next question.
And thank you for listening. See you next time. So first of all, let's just start off with the basic question, which I had to ask you, which is, what is culture fit?
I think to answer that, we first need to understand what culture is. And therein lies the biggest problem with recruiting for culture fit. There are more than 50 definitions of what organizational culture is. People can barely agree. From as simple as, you know, that famous quote, culture is what we do around here, right through to thinking about more of the constructs, the rituals, the behaviors you expect to see within your culture, the values and beliefs. So unless you really understand the definition of culture you're choosing to adopt within your organization and the organizational culture you have and how that's translated into your operations and processes, then recruiting for culture fit is as useful as saying, I'm only going to recruit Scorpios because I hear they're feisty.
So back in the day when I was building my second business, I was reading lots and lots of books, Good to Great by Jim Collins, Remote by the guys from 37 Signals, all these classic books. And they were kind of suggesting, oh, you recruit for culture fit. Zappos was another one, I think, where they said that they encourage people to bring their friends in to work with them. Now, I'm guessing that the science has moved on a little bit and maybe we've moved on as employers. So why would someone not want to recruit for culture fit these days?
Culture is undeniably an incredibly important part about organizations and organizational performance. Recruiting of a culture fit, however, is tricky. It's not impossible, but it's tricky. And the reality is, unless you are at that level of unless you're at that level of sophistication within your business, then it's very difficult to reliably assess candidates' knowledge, skills, and abilities, their competencies within the context of your culture. So if you would have listened last week to the podcast or yesterday, how often do these come out? The last episode. you would have heard us talk about recruitment and the science of recruitment. And a big part of the science of the recruitment is that the recruitment methods we have, whether it be interviews, psychometrics, work sample tests, is that they offer predictions of future work performance. Predictions of future work performance vary. So we have over 100 years of research, and that research has identified roughly 30 predictors or recruitment methods that are predictive of job performance. And yes, one of them is culture fit.
Before we go any further, can you just give us an idea of, for people like me who don't really understand what predictors are? So can you give an example of a predictor?
Yeah, so job interviews, for example, are a predictor. It's a recruitment method that is predictive of future work performance. So in its most simple terms, if a candidate performs well at interview, then that's going to predict a certain percentage of how well they're going to perform on the job.
Right, okay. And so you were saying that culture is potentially a predictor, but it's nowhere near as important as people are thinking.
Culture fit is a predictor. But as I mentioned then, each predictor has different levels of variance in terms of how predictive it is. So we think about, if, you know, in our ideal world, we'd take a candidate through a process and be able to 100% predict with confidence that because they performed well in that process, they're going to 100% perform well on the job. It's not quite that straightforward because people are complicated, they have free will, behaviors change, context, etc. So we can only assign a certain percentage of predictability to each of these methods. In terms of the most predictive and consistently found to be the most predictive or the best predictor of job performance is general mentor ability or IQ. And that's predictive of about 42% of future job performance. If we compare that to other methods such as employment interviews, which is very, very popular, that's about 34%. Then we get into the more nitty-gritty, some psychometrics, integrity tests, for example, is about 21%. Certain personality inventories are about 10%. So it drops further and further. Culture fit is on the list. However, it counts for less than 2% of future job performance.
So if I've understood this correctly, then if I was to recruit 100 people based on culture fit alone and nothing else, then only two of them are likely to pan out for me because there's a two.
Yeah.
Whereas if I predicted 100 people based on, what was the top one you just mentioned?
General mental ability or IQ.
Okay. So if I was to predict on IQ, then you're saying that out of those 100, 54 would work out.
42.
Sorry, 42.
Yeah, roughly half of the candidates who perform well in general mental ability are going to perform well in the job, roughly. It's not quite that straightforward, but is an idea of kind of the power of that method in terms of predicting future performance of candidates that is the most reliable.
Okay, so if someone's listening to this and thinking, shit, this is the way that I recruit at the moment based on culture fit, then what should they be doing differently? How do they pivot and transition to potentially a more reliable way of recruiting?
I think the first step, and as we talked about last week, is to understand the role that you're recruiting for and the knowledge, skills and abilities or competencies that you need for, you know, it's going to enable somebody to perform well within that role and the function of that role within your business. Once you understand that, then you can look at different methods that are more predictive of future performance and using a mixed methods approach, again, as we chatted about last week. So general mental ability tests, IQ tests are very predictive. Employment interviews are number two. Integrity tests, psychometrics, and using a combination of these methods that are more closely linked to the job rather than the individual and their beliefs, which are less tangible. Focusing your assessment methods on the competencies you need for that job is going to be much more a reliable method.
So let me ask you then, let's assume that, let's just say that you were talking about Google or Zappos. I won't use Amazon because they've got a negative culture from what it appears, but Zappos has got a very clear culture, it appears. They've even written a book on it. Is it okay for them to recruit on culture fit?
So organisations at that level of their understanding of their organisational culture are much more sophisticated in that it's translated to every level of their business. So finding employees who can do a job is absolutely critical. Finding employees that can add to your culture is also important. And if you're at a point where you feel your culture has reached that level of sophistication like Google, then it's going to translate or transcend from kind of beyond culture fit to more than assessing competencies that are in line with your culture. So, shall I give you an example?
Mm.
So in terms of recruitment, let's say one of the core values of your company is to be bold mm-hmm. in the pursuit of new business, new customers, then that value, if it's embedded in the culture, then the leaders of the business and their teams would have agreed on what types of behaviors constitute being bold. There's a clear and a broad consensus of what these positive behaviors are, such as maybe thinking outside the box, being innovative in terms of expanding customer business. What they've also would have done is added those relevant tasks into the job description. So then, you know, a task of your expectation of job is that you proactively network and conduct outreach activities to identify new business opportunities. More so than that, it's going to be translated into training and development operations. So let's say, for example, an organization might have created a business development playbook with best practice examples or suggested communications templates of how to pursue new business boldly. And then, of course, you're going to have performance metrics in place as well that are going to make sure that people are kind of working towards that target. In that case, then, to be bold is authentic. It's a lived-in value of the business and the people in it. It's woven into the fabric of that culture. So at that level, recruiting for people who are bold is tangible because you understand what that means. It's measurable, and therefore it's going to be more predictive of job performance. A quick podcast recommendation for you. If you haven't listened to Content is Profit with the amazing Louise and Fonzie Kamecha recently, then you're missing out on great guests, crazy hosts, and the secret behind something they call the frictionless sale. If you're anything like me, you're not really going to get on with those sales, bro, woof, kind of podcasts. And, you know, if that's the case, then these guys are a refreshing change for you.
One of the episodes I listened to recently was How to Outsmart Google in 2024. If you publish anything on the interwebs, then you know you need to rank on Google. Their guest, Jason Barnard, talks you through all the secrets you need to know to outsmart Google this year. Listen to Content is Profit wherever you get your podcasts. But let me ask you then, if you've got an organization of a reasonable size, let's say 50 people, which is, you know, not a small organization, then do you think that the culture might vary depending on the function? For example, if you've got a team of creatives, you want them to think outside the box, like you said, be creative. However, the same team of five people who do the accounts, you do not want them to be creative and think outside the box. So can there be subcultures within an overall culture?
There absolutely can be, yeah. It's called subcultures or microcultures. You do see it more so in larger businesses, but yeah, even, you know, organizations of 20 could have microcultures within the business as well. And that is a symptom of two things. Either one, the broader overarching culture hasn't been well defined, and or two, it's not been embedded within the organization, within the managers, within the behaviors, within the processes. So the reason those microcultures appear is going to be because each manager has a different interpretation of how that element of culture translates into operations. And that is going to vary. In terms of positively having subcultures or microcultures, I'm not sure. I understand what you mean about how you don't want your accountants to be overly creative. But at the same time, you want them to be creative within the law. There's going to be tax breaks or loopholes or programs or incentives that, you know, an accountant that thinks outside the box or is well researched in their field are going to understand and bring to the attention of the business owner. Yes, in terms of more creative fields, that carries a little bit less risk and is a bit more playful perhaps. But the behaviors are the same, or the value is the same. How those behaviors translate may be subtly different between functions, but ultimately it's all part of the same value.
So you have a great story, which I think we might even have told before on the podcast, about the janitor. I think this is going to be like a recurring theme, as every time I bring up this story about the janitor. But can you tell the story again? Because I think that...
Sure, yeah. So there's a story that goes around, maybe it's urban legend, I don't know. But JFK was visiting NASA in the 60s when they were working in the race to put a man on the moon. And the president turned to the janitor and said, "What's your role here?" And the janitor said, "I'm here to put a man on the moon, sir."
Sorry, a mouthful of water then. Yep. And I think that's I get the idea. I get culture now. I do. I used to think culture was all about, oh, you define it. You sit there in a room, you define it, and then you go out and you write it on the wall and everyone does it. And obviously I can see that. Now, are there any circumstances where it is okay to recruit for Culture Fit?
Culture Fit alone, no, it's not. To be an element within your decisions, yes, and particularly as the recruitment process goes on. So for example, if you've defined your job very clearly, you've done a thorough job analysis, you've understood your competencies, you've designed a recruitment process that reliably and validly measures those, you've assessed candidates against a set criteria, and you've got two candidates who are matched dead on marks, then you might think a bit more about culture fit, about values, about the alignment of the individual with the values of your organization, perhaps. But even then, there's an argument to pick the person who doesn't fit your culture as much as you might think the other one does.
Can you explain a bit more about that?
So there's a phenomenon in psychology called groupthink. And it basically means that groups that are very familiar, whether it be in an organization or outside of work, the group is striving for consensus. And often in these environments, they're very friction-free, they're very smooth, but there's less critical thinking, there's less challenge, there's less diversity of thought. And that in itself can squash things like creativity, innovation, or even, you know, just people going the extra mile. Consensus, yeah, it would bring you a quiet life as a leader, but it's probably not going to be the best enabler of growth.
So in that, we're just thinking about that then. So if I'm recruiting for a, not necessarily a leadership position, this is someone who might be, you know, a creative or something, or might be a developer or something like that, then I can totally see why culture is a bad idea to even consider culture unless it's the very last differentiator. I can see that. But if you're talking about what you just said there, leadership, so you've got someone who's coming in as the creative director and everyone else has got this group think and they're all like one type of person, then from what you're saying, it sounds like it's a bit more important to consider this idea of someone who is slightly different to the culture. Have I misunderstood?
You know, it's that famous Einstein quote, isn't it? It's, we cannot solve our problems with the same thinking we used when we created them. If you've always got that same thinking within your business and you're coming across challenges or roadblocks to performance that you can't get over, this whole phenomenon of groupthink is not going to help. You need somebody who is going to be different, think about things differently, or inspire other people, allow other people to think differently. You need that dynamic environment, particularly in small businesses that are trying to grow.
But then I'm just thinking about what you said there, and groupthink doesn't sound necessarily like a culture, just more that it just so happened you have 15 people who all think similarly, or is it a culture thing?
I think it can be an element of culture, yeah, probably not a desirable one. It might be in some areas. So for example, if you work in, I don't know, an area of compliance, for example, you might want everyone on the same page in terms of that level of governance. But yeah, even then, it's more of a case that if you're recruiting for culture fit in a way that is not done in an organization where the culture is fully understood, people are with it and it's embedded within the operations and process in the organization, the danger is, at best, you're going to recruit people like you. And then if you recruit people like you, you're going to be more susceptible to groupthink. You're not going to have that diversity of thought to solve the problems that are inherent in growing a business.
So give us your sort of 10-second synopsis. We've obviously said, start off by saying, should you recruit for culture fit? And you said, no. But can you give us a little synopsis on why that's a bad idea for anyone who's listening?
Sure. So the reality is that culture fit is not a reliable way of predicting future job performance. It counts for less than 2% of future job performance. There are much better predictors out there, from general mental ability test, simple interviews are much more predictive of future job performance than culture fit is. And secondly, the issue with culture fit is that unless it is, and I know I keep going on about this, but culture isn't just values on the wall or how we do things around here. It is ingrained and embedded within every element of your organization, and it promotes those positive behaviors that are reflective of that culture. If you are at that level, then recruiting for culture fit might work for you.
Okay, so if you're interested in learning a bit more about the roadmap that Leanne's talked about stage one for, go to oblonghq.com/roadmap. There'll be a link in the show notes. If you want Leanne to help you with your recruitment, then just send an email to leanne@oblonghq.com. And if you get anything else you want to talk about with in terms of the podcast, which is feedback, you think you're being a good guest, great. We'll definitely chat to you about that. Or anything else, just email podcast@oblonghq.com. Great. Well, I think that's the end of episode 4. We haven't decided what episode 5 is yet, so it's going to be a surprise for all of us. But until then, bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye now. Bye.